cliffcentral.com.
I'm very, very pleased to have someone with an incredible life story who has turned what most people would consider a situation that is insurmountable into a situation of triumph. Her name is Andy Kaur. She's a businesswoman, social entrepreneur. You've got incredible qualifications. You've done amazing things. This Chuma Holdings that you started, it's a women-led investment company with the interest in platinum mining. I mean, you've done very, very well. But who would have guessed that your backstory would have been so traumatic? It's a pleasure to meet you, Andy.
It's a pleasure to meet you too and be at Cliff Central.
Oh, you've never been before?
No.
Welcome. What do you think of the place?
I love it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Good. I hope they offered you something to drink outside and see I was looking after you. See, I hope you were decent.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. Was he nice to you?
He's very nice.
He's very polite, right? That's why we put him out there.
And handsome.
And handsome. See, well, yeah, look at that.
That, Sia, I think, is a perfect answer. I won't say no to that.
Wow. Now, Andy, you do so much. And I want to cut to the chase here because I think a lot of people are victims in this country of horrible, horrible things they didn't ask to be part of. Men behave stupidly and embarrassingly and badly, and we just don't, it seems to me like some of the time we're just animals, and there's so many women who have to put up with this on a daily basis in South Africa. Your story is one of survival, but it's also one where you've done behind the scenes a huge amount of advocacy work to try and help women who are the victims of violence, women who are the victims of rape. You yourself were raped. I mean, it's an awful, awful story. But do you want to take us back to what happened to you so that we can just get an idea of how you overcame these things?
You know, I think that we have even become worse than animals, because I believe that in the animal kingdom, there is an order of mating. Now, I think that what we are seeing in South Africa and what we're seeing in the world, I mean, I think that the story of the man with 21 clitorises in his freezer.
I mean, what's that all about?
Is just crazy. I mean,
some crazy Danish guy in Bloemfontein.
Yes. So, and people always think that the victims are somewhere in the townships, but they are all over the place. They're in Sandton. They're also men.
They're in our families.
I think that sometimes with the hijackings, men get raped. We don't hear that. And young boys do get raped. And in my case, I was just taking a very short walk in Port Elizabeth, going to take a 5:30 flight to Johannesburg. It was about 2:30, fully cleared.
How many years ago was this?
This was 5 years ago.
You're just walking to the airport?
No, I was walking on the beach. I mean, it was hot. 9th of December. Everybody was outside. It was on a Thursday, and I kind of thought, oh, I'm getting to a board meeting tomorrow and people in PE are chilling. So I decided it's my home time. Let me just go for a walk.
Right. A lot of people would do this just to de-stress.
Exactly.
To get out there, get a bit of sun.
Okay.
You know, it's a healthy
thing. And that kind of 15-minute walk I'd given myself ended up being 15 hours of being abducted and raped.
Jesus. I mean, how did this happen? How did you know something was going wrong there? Because you're in a public place, right?
Well, you get somebody catching you, you know, you get accosted. And, you know, in a beach, I didn't know that people can run on the sand. People can run behind you. You'll never know because the sand is soft.
You can't
hear them. The waves are very noisy. So it's only afterwards that I realized, because I tried to figure out how did he run? How did he find me? And then I realized how I'm so aware of how noisy, especially South African beaches, how noisy the waves are.
And Andy, I think a lot of women go for walks on the beach. It's the one place you feel you can connect with nature, you can meditate a little. I don't think that you wonder at that time that you need to have someone with you.
No.
You know?
I've always done the walks. I live in PE. I love it. And PE has some really crappy weather. But even on those days, I would dress up and go for a walk.
And the beaches are beautiful.
The beaches are beautiful, but I think that the problem with that particular beach was that people who live in PE, like one of the prosecutors in my case, told me that, oh, we don't walk there.
Which beach is this?
This is King's Beach. Okay. They said it had bush dwellers. Now, my question is, why would police, I mean, if you look at Durban, Durban has an international status. So right. people can go to Durban. You have talked about more flights coming into Durban. Mm. They have people who live in the bush, and the people who live in the bush prey on the people who walk on the on the sea. Yeah. So I think that a lot of we as a society have to work hand in hand collectively to deal with gender-based violence. And if places are unsafe, people have to put boards. Mm-hmm. Port Elizabeth lost its blue international status a week after my incident, and they only got it last year, October.
Are they doing something now about these people who live in these bushes?
And they're still there. Jesus. We had a march about 2 years ago, and we saw one of the alleged, it was a father and a son, they were carrying buckets of water, wearing designer glasses and designer watches. Now, a bush dweller cannot have those.
Hang on a second, because this is an amazing story too, that while on an anti-rape march, you actually spotted two of these people.
Exactly.
Who raped you.
I actually even took a picture with the son of this father.
You know, I want to get to that in a second, because first, the story of what happened to you is, I think, to many people, something that they just always think will happen. You know, it happens out there. It doesn't happen to us. It doesn't happen to people we know. Again, you're the successful member of a board of a massive South African company. You've gone for a walk on your home beach. This is something that could happen to anyone. And you're walking along, and someone runs along the sand. You can't hear them. The sea is making a noise. They abduct you. They grab you. They carry you away? They drag you away?
Well, they were about to kill me. So I...
Did they have knives? Did they have guns?
It was one person that had a knife.
Oh, my
and
God.
And then I got blindfolded. So everything else happened for 15 hours. I was blindfolded. But I think that... and you're not talking about deep bush here. You're talking about just little... crinkly bushes.
Scrub, basically. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. From where I was, I could see people walking on the beach.
Oh, my God.
Now, and apparently, this is from some of the car guards. This is something that is happening, that is known. But I have to say that the CEO of the Mandela Development Agency, Pierre Fochas, was very touched by the story and escalated the refurbishment of King's Beach, and they've put over 60 million to make the beach look safe. But I think that the bush dwellers are still there. And if you look at Durban, there's so much visible policing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Port Elizabeth need to do that. We need to see, and the bush dwellers have to go. I was there last year looking after my dad who was terminal.
Mm.
And from hospital, I would go and walk. Mm. And sometimes I would spot them. So
You went walking after what had happened to you?
Yeah.
You're not afraid?
When I go to walk in PE, I usually wear a Muslim garb and a burqa.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you think that helps?
Well, I disguise myself.
Hang on, I'm not sure I understand. You don't mind going to walk? You're not afraid?
But what am I going to do? The beach is for us, and I love it.
I'm amazed that you're brave enough to go to the beach after what happened to you.
I can't let the rapists and these people
win.
Mm. And also, does it mean that I will be landlocked for the rest of my life?
No, absolutely not. But you think it helps you that you dress like a Muslim woman and you disguise yourself?
I thought it would, but I think that I get a different story. I get other insults by different people. So it doesn't become I thought it would help. I kind of thought there was some religious and whatever. No, there's no respect.
Now, when you went to this march, you spotted one of these rapists and the father and son, right?
Yes.
While you were in an anti-rape march, this is, it's almost like a horrible storybook.
Yes.
You're marching with other women and some men.
Including the executive, the deputy executive mayor of Port Elizabeth was also in that march.
How did it happen? You're marching down the street and you see these guys. Did you tell someone immediately, hey, I recognize those two guys?
We were gathering so that we can start the march. And then my nephew, who works at NMMU, who has been walking the streets to find these people, because he was my nephew and he was very devastated by this.
Sure.
He had gotten to know who they were. Mm. And we saw the man carrying a huge bucket and the father with designer glasses and a beautiful gold watch.
Probably stolen off of somebody that they
And then the son molested. Was so drugged that I took a picture. He took a Kwanele picture and I took a Kwanele picture. Somebody took a picture of us.
Did you...
And then we did a civil arrest.
Oh, it's okay.
We got all the men around to sit over around them, and they were so drugged that they were not aware what was happening.
Were they? Do you think that they might have been drugged when they raped you?
Of course, they. I mean, I think that which normal man will be able to rape somebody for 15 hours?
This is an amazing thing, because I think there are a lot of crimes that are perpetrated in South Africa under the influence of these drugs, whether it's nyaupe or one of those things.
Yes.
Do you think that's what they were probably on?
I mean, I think that also in PE and in other places, you find even sons, when they've taken nyaupe, they rape their mothers. There was a case of a son in PE who said that, well, he only rapes his mother when he is on the drugs.
I mean, it's just...
And the community ended up getting this son arrested, because I think that the mother was afraid to... was terrified to report the son.
This is so... I don't even know what the word is to use for this. It's... devastating that this is what would happen in communities, that, and it's all because of the influence of these drugs and people that are out of their minds. This is not how normal people behave. Your ordeal lasted 15 hours. How did you survive that? Most people can't even go without water for 15 hours.
How do you survive?
What was going through your mind?
What was going through my mind? I was praying. I was just saying, Lord, save my soul. You know, I was really praying to come out alive. I just told myself, my body's my body.
And you're going to make it through this?
Yeah. I needed to make it through this. And I think, Gareth, one of the things we have to really talk about that is even more serious is the fact that in the last 5 years, because I've been vocal, I've been talking to people, directors of companies, executives in different positions, local people, and they talk about the abuse and the rape that they experienced at their homes when they were growing up. And this is across the board. There is no social class,
right,
no race, no religion. These are all the stories. So, you know, the story of people unknown that do this is less compared to what happens at home.
Well, this is the funny thing is, we South Africans like to complain about crime, and we always see it as an opportunistic thing, that there's someone lurking in the bushes, which was your case.
Yes.
Let's be fair. This is not someone you knew who did this to you.
Yeah.
But they say that the majority, by a long margin, the majority of molestation, of rape, of sexual abuse, happens within families and within households. So in other words, that there are fathers, uncles, brothers, sons who are doing this to people who are known to them.
Yes. You know, I had an interview last year to do an executive program. And the person who came to interview me was the manager of this international executive school.
Right.
we ended up spending 3.5 hours, and she patched a picture of how she used to be raped by her brother. They are a year apart. And she used to be raped by the uncle, the father, and the grandfather.
How?
I think 40 years later, she asked, this was a very prominent family in South Africa. And then she went to ask the brother, who is now, you know, a big person in the business world.
Yeah.
But why did you do that?
And
the brother said, but they were doing it to me. But you can understand, so where
there's,
does...
There's such a cycle of abuse people can't escape
from. Where would... I mean, I think this woman is my age.
Yeah.
That there was no cell phones with porn 50 years ago.
No.
Where would a six-year-old have learned about rape? So something was happening to him.
What's wrong with us? I mean, this is such a horrible, horrible question that we have to face up to. Why is this such a thing? And do you think this happens all over the world, or is it a South African thing?
I think it happens all over the world, but I think in South Africa, from the past 4 years, 5 years, I have learned that it is so prevalent. You know, some of the people, I think that if you look at my website, I have companies that help me.
What's the website?
Kwanele-enuf.co.za.
Kwanele-enuf.co.za.
And Kwanele is Xhosa for enough. So enough
right.
is enough.
Right.
One of the guys at MC Such Able, it's an advertising company, and they help me with graphics and everything else when I have a campaign. I ask them because they are so excited to help. So I ask them, because sometimes I will ask for something so little, and then they come back with a lot of creative stuff that is just, I'd not even ask for. Mm. And sometimes they initiate work. So I asked the guys, because in this team, there are many guys, I said, you know, what makes you so interested in this campaign?
Yes.
And one guy said, well, I'm just going to get married. I'll have a wife, I'll have a child, and I think that's one of the things I'm thinking about. And one guy said, well, most of the girlfriends I've had
have
been raped. And this has no color. You know, these are white guys. So there's no myth that it happens in a certain race, in a social class. It happens across the board.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second. It's a very uncomfortable thing for a lot of people to discuss, but rape is a power thing. It's not a sex thing, right? So it's about dominating someone else. It's about having complete control over them and treating them like an object, essentially.
Yes.
That's what it is. And the guys who do this have massive psychological problems. Many of them were themselves the victims of sexual abuse at a young age.
Yes,
They're just enacting what they had enacted upon them as a way of trying to get back what they lost.
Yeah, there is a gentleman, Luke Lamprecht, who's a clinical psychologist, and he works a lot with men who have raped and who have been raped. And you can see the vicious cycle and the dynamic of abuse. There's actually a case of a woman in who used to live in Pretoria, who was abused by the father, even after she was married, because of the dysfunctional nature, she continued to, I don't know what to say, I don't know whether they have sex now, but they continued this relationship, although she was married. And when the father died, this woman started molesting her son.
Jesus.
And then she went to church to confess and told the husband, who was British, and they left the country because she knew that there was something wrong and she needed to start a new life.
Andy, this seems like such a horrible, horrible situation. Is there any way out of it? For someone like that, I mean, it's such a deep dysfunction. Is there a certain amount of therapy you can go for? Is there some kind of treatment you can seek that can help people end the cycle? If there's someone listening to us right now who's going through something like this, how do you begin to stop it? Is there hope?
I don't know. You know, I read a book by an Indian lady, and she was talking about a man who had witnessed, an Indian man who had witnessed abuse when she was growing up. And he decided that he would never do that. But he ended up abusing the wife. And at some point, he went for counseling, and they were very wealthy in this book. And the man ended up saying, please divorce me because I don't want to abuse you, but I abuse you. I think that, Gareth, the Kwanele campaign is saying, if at all this has been, just like apartheid, if at all this has been our history, let's clean the slate
and
transform it and create a new history. And we, the people who have been subjected to this, you know that people who grew up under apartheid still have the residuals in their thinking of black and white and green and yellow. So I think that we need to make a concerted effort as a country, a collaborative concerted effort. And that starts with us, the adults at home, not harboring perpetrators. It starts with us saying, making, I think that we need a civil movement against gender-based violence, just as we did
against racist,
against apartheid.
Yeah. Right.
And we have to say no, and that needs to start at home.
Why do you think society obviously does not like this kind of thing? It's not societally acceptable for people to practice incest, for example, right? You don't see incest in movies or in soap operas or in video games. It's not something people talk about in public because it's deeply disturbing. Incest is a terrible thing. Everybody agrees that. Yet it seems to me that it's happening all over the place. Now, people usually blame the media, or they say it's movies, or they say there's violence all around us. But incest is one of those things people don't ever talk about. How come it is still such a deep-seated problem? And you yourself said just now, and the figures bear out the same information, that most of the rape that happens in this country is familial.
Yes, family, communities. I think that the women need to stand up.
Yes, but,
The men also need to transform.
You know, here's the deal. The women have to stand up. The women keep having...
And the men also need to stand up.
Yeah.
They need to change. I think that there needs to be... The movement has to involve the whole of society.
Let me tell you something. If I lived in a community and I knew someone, a man who was raping someone, I would immediately hand that guy over. I'd say to the police, this guy's a rapist, and I would.
But we don't.
Why don't we do this?
Because of fear. Because
that you'll be raped if you're a woman, or that, that there'll be violence.
Because of fear of violence. Because I think that we're trapped. You know, Steve Biko used to say that, you know, the stronghold of the oppressor is having the stronghold of the mind of the oppressed. I think that both men and women, our minds and our psyches are oppressed, that we cannot shackle this. I mean, how come is it that we talked about smoking? And we are crowded out smokers.
Right.
Why can't we crowd out perpetrators? Why can't we as communities say, if you are my son and you rape,
you're going to, I'm going to tell the police.
The police. I think that you are now finding universities saying, if you are with the whole campaign and on zero tolerance, keep creating zero tolerance environment towards gender-based violence. If you rape, it doesn't matter what the police case says, because some of them get bungled anyway.
Sure, and dockets go missing.
At our university, we have a disciplinary committee, and you get expelled.
Right.
You know, that creates a clear... that creates a clear accountability and consequence of the rape. And I think that it's happened because at home, when the father rapes the daughter, there is some kind of understanding with the mother that they will call this daughter the last born, and the girl who has been raped has to be silenced for the rest of their life about the fact that actually this is not your brother or sister, but your child. So I think that there is a conspiracy of silence in our society against gender-based violence, towards gender-based violence.
We need to
break all those chains of silence.
Open it up and let the ugliness show.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
That's the only way we'll make it embarrassing.
And we need healing this. Because yeah. This is, it's, I think that there will be few people who say it hasn't touched my family. Jeez. If you say it hasn't, you probably have a sister who hasn't told you, or an aunt who hasn't told you, or a brother who hasn't told you.
It's alarming. I mean, we all know this is wrong, but we should be able to deal with it. How are you so strong? How did you break out of this? Because you could easily have decided to become a victim, felt sorry for yourself, never told anyone.
If you talked to me 4 years ago, you would see a shattered soul, because I think that rape doesn't just, you know, something when it's broken can be fixed. When it's shattered, it's got to be reconstructed. So it's taken me this long to be where I am. So
did you have help? Did you have a support system? How did you make it through? Who can you trust?
I go to a psychologist every week. And I think that people get tired. First of all, what I noticed was that friends and people around, they don't want to hear about it.
Really?
They actually think, okay, shame it happened, but let's continue.
Let's not talk about it.
So the safe space, because it takes such a long time, I'm still seeing the psychologist. It takes such a long time to heal. So nobody wants to be hearing about your story. They've got their other things in their lives. So I think that proper therapy, because the psychologist, that's their job to help you. You can say the same thing. You can be dysfunctional for a year. They understand that that is the process of healing.
And they're prepared to listen.
And they're genuine.
Right.
You know, I can say that this shatters the person. So you actually have to remake yourself. My daughter keeps on saying, you know, I want my mother. And I
say, she knows that the old mom is gone.
Yes. She knows the old mom is gone.
Jesus.
And
what do you tell her to try to protect her from this world that you know exists out there?
I mean, she was 22 when it happened, and she lived in London. And it shattered her so much that she also had to go for therapy. And it changed. What one thing she said was that, you know, this has just kept my childhood, you know. It's taken away something that I thought was pure and good about the world.
Andy, how did you stop yourself from hating men? Because it would have been an easy response to have gone, you know what, men, because this was done to you by men. It's easy to categorize people, to say, well, all men are horrible, cruel, vicious creatures. You have men in your life.
You know, I'm afraid of hobos. I'm afraid of people who are homeless. I'm afraid of the men who are begging in the streets, because those are the kinds of men who rape me.
Right.
I'm afraid of those. I mean, I think I drive wearing glasses because I really get terrified. Especially on the four ways, when people come to you, I will just drive my car. I'll be in the middle of the road. Somebody will think I'm breaking the law, but I'm actually running. I'm running away from somebody on the traffic light. But at the same time, you know, I read a lot about this, and I had trained as a psychologist, so I understand that not all people are the same.
Yeah.
And And I think that if you want to leave, you leave with people. So you've got to find the good people around you. And I think that what has happened is that I don't compromise myself with men who show tendencies of abuse, whether it is to their women or whoever else. You know, I don't have any tolerance for that.
How can you spot that in a guy? There are lots of men who are very adept at behaving. You mentioned earlier a very prominent businessman who used to abuse his sister. Now, there are probably men in South African society who blend in, who you wouldn't guess were perpetrators of this kind of violence.
I'm saying once I get to know you.
Yes, okay, but I mean, there's no way that you can tell immediately from the outside.
No, I don't think that there's any way. There is no way.
But do you ever feel safe? Do you ever go, okay, I can let my guard down now. I'm among people I can trust. I feel safe here. Where do you feel safe?
At home.
Are you totally comfortable at home?
Yeah.
When there are other people around or when there's no one around?
I'm comfortable at home when I've alarmed myself in my room.
Do you ever think you'll be able to get back to that place you were mentally, emotionally, before 2010?
You know, I was such a carefree person. Mm. You know, if I go to Zimbali, I would, you know, walk through the woods and go on the beach for hours.
You could never do that again?
I can never do that again. I think that a part of me...
That is so sad, Andy.
A part of me, you know, I think that in South Africa, there are so many people that I've talked to that you think are normal, whose souls have been tarnished, have been broken, who are just living because they have to live. You know, and if you haven't gotten the counseling that you need, you actually have these people who are totally broken. And it affects productivity. You wonder why somebody...
You can't worry about work if you've got this going on in your head.
No, of course.
You can't worry about other people looking after your own children.
No. I had a dog. It was my daughter's dog.
Yes.
A year after the incident... And my daughter loved this dog, and she was in London, and I couldn't tell her that, you know, I can't look after the dog because sometimes I would sleep the whole weekend, so it means the dog won't eat.
Yeah.
So I had to go and give the dog away because I was so depressed.
You couldn't possibly after something else.
Yes. Oh. I mean, an easy thing like waking out of bed and going to feed the dog. I couldn't do that.
Where do we? I mean, Gwanele dash enough. I mean, there's a place to start, right? But you've got to find someone to help you if you're in this situation. So many women, what they say, one in every four, one in every five women in South Africa has been a victim of this kind of abuse.
Yes, and you must also remember one in every six boys has also been abused.
Yeah, you see, and nobody talks about the male rape.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, Andy, you know what? In so many ways, your story just, it makes me miserable and sad and depressed and unhappy, and I feel powerless. But in other ways, I look at the way that you are doing the work you do, this advocacy that you do, and working with the deputy mayor in PE and in Nelson Mandela Bay and doing these kinds of things. That makes me feel like, you know what, there's got to be a sunrise after all of this.
You know, Mandela, in a book, in a quote that he gave, there was a study by UNESCO in 2005 on broken bones and broken bodies. And Mandela wrote a piece. Mm. There were other people who wrote prefaces in this book.
Yeah.
And his piece around gender-based violence was that safety and security doesn't just happen. It's got to be a collective effort. So people, we all have to chip in. You know, the aunt who sees a child being raped needs to lift the hand and say, uncle or my brother, this is not
going to work.
This is a crime.
Right.
It is actually a crime. And then he also says that It's not enough for countries to get democracy without having liberation of people and communities.
And sometimes it means liberation from your own family. I mean,
exactly.
The scary thing here is that the one place that you think you should be safe is with your family. You
exactly.
know, if the family unit's dysfunctional, everything after that's going to be a
exactly.
screw-up, right?
And he says that we've got a responsibility to take care of children. And these are the children. Most of the vulnerable people are children. But then I want to come to your point where you kind of feel paralyzed by this.
Yes.
The last part of his quote, he says, we should be tireless in fighting this because we've been fighting this for years. And then he says that instead of being paralyzed, we need to take this as a cautionary lesson of how gender-based violence can kill society. I mean, I think that the KPMG study last year, 2014, mentioned that the cost of gender-based violence to society, to South Africa, is between 28 and 42 billion. That's involving, you know, the cost, lost of earnings, of revenue, lost of tax to the fiscus.
And these are the numbers that you figure out from that. I mean, this is what accountants have done, but the damage to society is just enormous.
They talk about, you know, the distress, the loss of people cannot reach their capacity.
Oh.
And some people become incapacitated for the rest of their lives. So you really begin to have a dysfunctional society. So there's a lot of healing. So Mandela says it's not enough. Let's take this as a cautionary lesson and move on. So I think that the work that we have started in mobilizing the country, uh-huh. we're trying to mobilize all of society, including the judiciary, to convict these people because,
yes.
you know, only about 1% of these cases, of these criminals are convicted. So we need to get that convicted. We're trying to say, let's try to create a country where that is healthy. That's the mission. So healthy would include drugs, HIV, and
mm-hmm.
so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That is safe and secure. And we've started this now with higher education in South Africa. Has brought into the Gwanele Zero Tolerance campaign, which has been a fantastic thing because it means that the 24 universities in the country will roll out this campaign and they will institutionalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And currently we've got NMMU, UNISA, University of Venda, UJ and Val University of Technology, who have launched the campaign in their campuses. So we're planting all these seeds and we're hoping to go to all the 24 universities and 50 EFT colleges as phase one.
Okay.
Phase two is to go to basic education
mm-hmm.
because you have got 22 million students from grade 0 to 18.
Right.
Those are vulnerable. I mean, last year we had 99,000 pregnancies. How many of those were rape? Because these are kids under 18.
Well, I got to tell you, I salute you for this campaign. I really hope that at some point you can feel safe somewhere other than just in your house when the alarm's on. Because this is not a country where we want anyone, women or anyone else, to feel that they can't be safe. Otherwise, it's not a place anyone wants to live.
But I think that I am not the only one who does not feel safe.
No, you're not.
South Africa, the current global peace report that was launched in June,
yeah,
named South Africa the 27th violent country in the world out of 162. And
horrendous.
The countries we were competing with were countries at war.
War zones. Correct.
Now, question is, are we at war or are we at peace or are we at war amongst ourselves?
It's a silent war. And it's a war waged within families. And it's a horrific, horrific situation. But we can, you say we can overcome this.
We can overcome this. If you overcome apartheid, we can overcome this with the will of everybody. Well, starting from the top.
Andy, thank you for coming to talk to us this morning. You know, a lot of these a lot of these interviews, we get to meet amazing people, and sometimes it's very flippant and silly and kind of ridiculous and funny, and then sometimes it's deeply meaningful and important. And this is probably the most important thing in our society at the moment. Gender-based violence, sexual aggression, sexual violence, if we can start with that, then the rest will be easy to figure out, because the damage done there is just unbelievable.
It affects everybody. It can affect you too.
Well, I know, and I really hope that for anyone who's listening who has been affected by this, that you hear Andy's story, that you get involved with this campaign, that you help the universities that are seeding it, and that you can find out more by going to kwanele-enough.co.za. Andy, thank you so much.
Thank you to you.
I just want to give you a big hug.
Yes, I do need one.
You can have as many hugs from me as you want. I love you. Thank you. Thank you for telling us your story. Good heavens. Wow. Sometimes you do the fun stuff, and sometimes you've got to focus on the things that really make a difference and matter in society. And what Andy Kawa is doing is precisely that. It makes a difference. We need to take things seriously every now and then. Cliffcentral.com.